Blog Talk Radio.
In these days of tea parties and constitution rallies, we're all looking back to our founding fathers for a little bit of wisdom. Samuel Adams said, "It does not take a majority to prevail, but rather an irate, tireless minority, keen on setting the brush fires of freedom in the hearts of men." This is the voice of an irate, tireless minority of one. We'll be talking about politics, religion, and doing what's right. And you can call me Mom.
You're lost, you don't know where you are, you're all alone. You're in the dark and you don't know where to find the light.
Episode of Irate Tireless Minority, and it's entitled If I Can, Then Who Can't? Because first off, with politics, we're going to be talking about who controls I can. And I'd like to welcome Bigfoot to the chat room. Howdy there, good to see you. First, we're going to start off with an article from NBCNews.com, which is being very nonpartisan and basically saying, no, all these fears are nonsense. Says the United States will officially relinquish its authority over the Internet's naming system, which is what ICANN is, on October 1st to a California-based nonprofit comprised of government and technology stakeholders. And they talk about the hard work that's been done in preparation, blah, 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 blah. It says, why is the government stepping aside? It says that it has, let's see, the U.S. Commerce Department's National Telecommunications and Information Administration has authority over the domain name system, but has mostly let ICANN run the show since 1998. And the decision to give ICANN the keys to the kingdom has been the plan all along, apparently. 1998 policy statement, the NTIA said it was committed to a transition that would let the private sector take over management of the domain name system. And so they've been working on it for a long time to turn this over. What exactly is ICANN? ICANN stands for, because it's I-C-A-N-N, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. Because computer programs are all numbers, really, and we convert them. Programmers convert them into words and stuff and into Windows so that we can play on the computers too. But basically, it runs on numbers. And when you have a domain name, that's basically a number in the system. It's a place where you tell your computer to go to get to a certain web page. And so that's what it is, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. It's a nonprofit group based in Los Angeles. Members hail from around the world and may work for governments, technology companies, or simply be interested in helping to shape the evolution of the Internet. It's important to note that ICANN does not control the Internet. The group's role is similar to both the Federal Communications Commission and the Better Business Bureau in that it develops policy on the Internet's unique identifiers, keeps track of the business involved in registration, and ensures everything is moving smoothly. And the mission on their website declares users of the Internet deserve a say in how it is run. And that's the crux of the matter right there. And it says names on the Internet allow us to type in NBCNews.com, for example, as opposed to a string of numbers. Does it change anything? No, it'll be business as usual. Well, at least for now. What could possibly be the danger, one might ask? Why would that be a bad thing? Who could object to, you know, some private entity? We want to privatize things. Yes, we do. There are certain things that government does that government is very good at, and certain things that government tries to do at which it absolutely fails. And the question here is, which one of those is this? Now, I am, I wouldn't say an aficionado, but I am a fan of fairy tales and folk tales. And that means that I like to read different fairy tales and folk tales from around the world and think about what those say about the civilization or lack thereof that spawned them. And from my Western European American point of view, I have gotten a hold of a book of folk tales from the Philippines that I find truly horrendous. Truly horrendous. People just killing each other and chopping off heads because of some sort of witchcraft or sorcery that's assumed, or dreams or whatever, and that's a good enough reason to go around chopping off heads. And that's not to say that some of the European ones aren't quite bloody. They are. But generally, there's a cause and effect type of relationship. It's not just a, oh, I decided to go out and found this guy and I chopped his head off sort of thing. And like, European fairy tales are very similar to many of the Russian fairy tales in which, you know, the peasant Isaac or Itzhak or whatever does things. It's the equivalent to Jack. Actually, it's not Isaac either. But that's rabbit trails. But a point is that names are very important. If you name a thing, you can control it, some tales say. That if you know the name, you know what it is. And that's speaking to, do you know the true identity? Do you know what's really happening? Do you know the truth, essentially? So names are important. And back in, let's see, back in, well, this was updated, but the original article was, I think, in 2004, 2002, or something like that. The Wall Street Journal ran an article by L. Gordon Krovitz. It's make or break for the Internet as we know it. Unless Congress acts this summer, the Obama administration will end U.S. protection of the Internet, handing authoritarian regimes, because you'll remember from the other article, it says some of the people who are running ICANN are in governments, and they're not necessarily governments that enjoy free speech, okay? Handing authoritarian regimes the power they have long sought to censor the web globally, including in the U.S. Battle lines were drawn last week. This was updated on June 13th when the Obama administration backed a plan submitted by ICANN to free itself in September from U.S. oversight that has kept the Internet open since the 90s. In response, bills were introduced in the Senate and the House to block the Obama Internet surrender. And there shouldn't need to be bills, and I will get to that as we go forward here. The administration falsely spins the U.S. role as largely clerical. In fact, U.S. control over ICANN and the root zone of the Internet through a Commerce Department contract stops China, Russia, and others from interfering with the engineers, developers, and others who operate the open Internet. The administration delayed for a year to find protections, but ICANN's 346-page plan falls far short. Instead of shielding the Internet from governments, the plan gives governments new powers. That's other governments than our own. Authoritarian regimes would gain greater influence over the ICANN board, and for the first time, governments would have a vote on bylaw changes, removal of the board, and the budget. So while things might not fall apart right away, the devil is in the details, and there will certainly be machinations to replace that board with people favorable to those authoritarian governments, which is not to say that we won't be trying to good people on the board. I say good people as though everybody else out there is evil besides the U.S., which is certainly not true. But the U.S. has been setting the standard because of our basic Christian values and ethics, which are falling apart and being driven apart and smashed and destroyed by this administration and others for the past 100 years. Thank you, progressives. But that's a rabbit trail as well. The Obama administration knows that the new Internet governance plan offers nothing like the guaranteed open Internet under continued U.S. control. In a lame defense plan, Commerce official Larry Strickling last week told the Washington Post, at the end of the day, this whole system is built on trust. meaning we're going to be trusting China and Russia to leave the internet alone. Really? China is going to be in favor of an open internet where you can say anything you like? Russia is? Are you kidding me? Why don't we just appoint Iran as the overseer of it? And the administration justifies unilateral surrender of U.S. oversight with the contention that authoritarian regimes will reciprocate by refraining from setting up domestic systems separate from the global internet. Yeah, sure they will. This is fantasy. Despite the Obama kowtow, Beijing has accelerated the requirement for its own domains for web access in China. Even the administration's handpicked independent analysis found risks in the ICANN plan. Commerce gave a single-source contract to the politically reliable Berkman Center at Harvard. Analysis includes a citation to warnings in an earlier Information Age column on how authoritarian regimes would fill the power void left by the U.S., but called these concerns largely without foundation. Note the word largely. How much of it does there need to be for it to be a problem? How much poison do you need to eat for you to be dead or very, very sick? Gee, I had a huge bowl of cereal and only one little piece of it was covered with strychnine. Or, you know, your pesticide of choice or poison of choice. Our appraisal is necessarily provisional as the important aspects of the transition remain to be determined. Amazingly, why is this amazing? The Obama administration says it's ready to implement a plan that remains incomplete. It's not. That's what the Obama administration does, so that then they can use that incompleteness to incrementally change things to the way they want them. Okay. ICANN postponed key issues for a phase two, timed after the U.S. gives up its contract and loses its leverage. Among topics to be decided only later is whether ICANN, currently based in California, remains under U.S. legal jurisdiction, moves overseas, or becomes part of the United Nations, fully controlled by governments. Internet governance lawyer Philip Corwin recently wrote a 26-page paper entitled The Irritating Irresolution of ICANN Jurisdiction. Congress should insist on continued U.S. stewardship because of the uncertain legal jurisdiction alone. Oh, yeah, let's move them over to China. Boy, and then we'll trust China to leave it alone and not put pressure on the people working there. That'll work. Yeah, that'll be handy. Now, there's flaws. Let's see here. There's the Protecting Internet Freedom Act introduced by Ted Cruz to oppose it. But the thing is, and I don't have it in this article, the thing is that I read in another article when I was researching this, that because this is such an important agency, the U.S. is not allowed to give it up without the approval of Congress by existing laws. And I wish I could find that little blurb, because it says that the Obama administration is once again, ooh, surprise, surprise, violating the law for their own ends. And their own ends are not the maintenance of the republic. The ends of the Obama administration are to fundamentally transform America into what? Into a communist country, to better serve the one-world wishers who say that the world would be better if the world was under one government telling everybody what to do in every last little detail of their flippin' lives. To which I say, mind your own business, government, and abide by the Constitution, because that's not your place. So, what's the danger? If you look at the Center for Security Policy, they have a little blurb on it. And one of the big dangers is that if you give over control of the naming system, then other entities, like those hostile governments, can assign names with suffixes like .mli or .gov, which heretofore have been restricted to U.S. government sites and U.S. military sites. If you see .mil, you know that's a military site. If you see .gov, you know that's a government site. But with the name control changed, anybody can be assigned those sites. You can go there thinking it's a secure government site or that you're looking at true government information, and it's not. This is rife with the potential for security breaches, for people to enter information into into duplicate sites or sites that are intended to look exactly like military or government sites and actually are not. That's a big part of the danger. And like I said, the importance of knowing the name of something, of knowing the truth about what something is, cannot be exaggerated in any society, in any place in history. You have to know the truth. And we're losing that. How can we keep it in a society men are allowed to compete as women? I feel like I'm a woman today. I don't feel like I could beat those men in a race, but I feel like a woman today, so I'm going to identify as a woman, and I can run against women, and then I'll get amazing times. I will become a world record holder. The reason you have separate men and women races in the Olympics is because men are faster. In general, yes, there's always going to be an exception. Some women are faster than some men, but when you get to those top levels, men are faster than women. And so we have groups segregated by sex so that the women can set their own records. If you're not going to do that, why have separate groups? Just have it all be skiing or 100-yard dash for everybody. It's crazy. We refuse the truth. We tell our children they can, oh, you don't want to be a little boy today? You can be a little girl. You don't want to be a little girl today? You can be a little boy. You can use the girls' restroom when you're a boy. No, you can't. It is time for people to say, no, you can't. Saw a little blurb, a little video on YouTube about some special snowflakes. One of them's lecturing her people saying, you know, when I'm gender queer and I feel most comfortable when I'm around people who support and validate me in that choice. So those of you who aren't doing that, shame on you. You need to try harder. No, we don't. You are making a choice, and there are consequences for choices, and you have to live with them. Okay, now I'm way off on a rabbit trail. This is not even in the show description, but it irritates me. Truth. Truth matters. Truth is important. You must know the truth if you're going to get anywhere. And hi, Flycatch. Nice to see you here joining us in the chat room today. I'm going to move on to religion. I'm sharing an excellent blog post by Daniel Greenfield on the Sultan Knish blog. Knish. I wonder if it's Knish or Nish. Don't know. But this was posted August 23rd. 100 years ago, Muslims were furious over an immigration bill whose origins lay with advocacy by a headstrong and loudmouthed Republican in the White House. The anti-immigration bill offended the Ottoman Empire, the rotting caliphate of Islam, soon to be defeated at the hands of America and the West, by banning the entry of all polygamists or persons who admit their belief in the practice of polygamy. This, as was pointed out at the time, would prohibit the entry of the entire Mohammedan world into the United States. And indeed it would. Talks about how the battle had begun earlier. Roosevelt declared in the State of the Union that the U.S. needed to have power to deal radically and efficiently with polygamy. Immigration Act signed into law in 1907, had banned polygamists or persons who admit their belief in the practice of polygamy, and that last part, their belief in the practice of polygamy, that was most significant because it made clear what had only been implied. The Immigration Act of 1891 had merely banned polygamists. The newest law banned anyone who believed in the practice of polygamy, and that group included every faithful believing Muslim. The Ottoman Empire's representative argued that their immigrants believed in the practice of polygamy but wouldn't actually take more than one wife. This argument echoes the current contention that Muslim immigrants may believe in a jihad against non-Muslims without actually engaging in terrorism. Well, you know, jihad can be peaceful as well, and they certainly are engaging in that. Anytime they promote Islam, Sharia-compliant financing, the refusal to call Islamic terror what it is, the refusal to acknowledge that jihad is part and parcel and duty of every Muslim, financial, semantic, cultural, social, every marriage, every level of jihad is being waged against us, and we simply refuse to recognize it as an act of war. But they believe in this. They believe the jihad against us. They are required to. It's their doctrine. It's essential to the doctrine of Islam to believe that they must conquer the world through any means possible for Allah. That's the overarching goal. World conquest, conversion of everybody that you're not using as a slave. And, you know, sorry, Hindus and animists and B'nai B'rith and Shintoists and Buddhists, you're not even people of the book. So all you'll get when Islam is in power is a choice to convert or die. If you're a Jew or a Christian, then they might decide to make a slave or a dhimmi out of you so that you can make stuff for them and be their slaves while they fight among themselves, because they will. Because Islam is so very invasive. They tell you how to live every aspect of your life, and if you're not doing it exactly the way your sect says, then you're not a good Muslim, you're not really a Muslim, you're an apostate, and you can be killed. So, the Muslim immigration was still slight at the time, and bans on polygamy had not been created to deliberately target them, but the Muslim practice of an act repulsive to most Americans, even back then, pitted their cries of discrimination and victimhood against the values of the nation. The immigration, in other words, Americans had more sense then. The Immigration Act of 1907 had been meant to select only those immigrants who would make good Americans, and Muslims would not. In his 1905 State of the Union address, President Theodore Roosevelt had spoken of the need to keep out all immigrants who will not make good American citizens. And that is the point of an immigration policy. We have no, absolutely zero necessity to take in people who are not willing to assimilate and be good citizens. There's no requirement for that. There's no moral imperative that says, oh, because they're suffering, even if they are the worst person in the world who believe that they can walk down the street, see a 12-year-old blonde girl and rape her because they're Muslim and she's not. Well, but they were suffering in their own country, so we can take them in. No, we have no requirement to take them in. Even if you're going from that humanitarian standpoint, it costs 12 times as much to bring a refugee here, a so-called refugee here, as it does to support them over in Europe. So for every one we bring here, that's 11 we're not supporting over there. You want to support them, you keep them over there because it's less expensive and more efficient and saves more. We do not have to bring in our enemies. Let's see. While today even mentioning radical Islam occasions hysterical protests from the media, Theodore Roosevelt spoke and wrote casually of the murderous outbreak of Muslim brutality, and with a great deal of foresight offered a description of reform movements in Egypt that could have been just as well applied to the Arab Spring, describing the mass of practically unchained, bigoted Muslims to whom the movement meant driving out the foreigner, plundering and slaying the local Christian. In sharp contrast to Obama's infamous Cairo speech, Roosevelt's own speech in Cairo had denounced the murder of a Coptic Christian political leader by a Muslim and warned against such violent bigotry. Muslims had protested outside his hotel, but Teddy hadn't cared. And that's what you're supposed to do. You're not supposed to care when the people pushing evil object to your saying, no, I'm not going to do that. They don't care when you protest their evil. Why should you care when they protest your good? Despite these programs, Muslims continue to face deportations over polygamy charges, even under President Woodrow Wilson. And polygamy, though not belief in it, remains a basis for deportation, though the law today is seldom enforced. There's a thing for you. And then there's a cute little exchange between President Stumpf, who is president of Immigration Board of Inquiry. And in the twilight of his term, Stumpf has little patience and tolerance for either Islam or polygamy. The Times relates a story, the laconic exchange between Stumpf and the Muslim migrants. "You believe in the Quran?" asked Mr. Stumpf. "Thank Allah, yes." "The Quran teaches you polygamy?" "Blessed be Allah, it does." "Then you believe in polygamy?" asked Captain George Ellis. We do, blessed be Allah, we do," chorused the Arabs, salaaming toward the setting sun. "That settles it. You won't do." And denied them entry. American leaders of a century past could not reconcile themselves to Islamic polygamy, yet our modern leaders have reconciled themselves to the Islamic mass murder of Americans. Thus it always is, when you close your eyes to one evil, you come to accept them all. And I'm going to move on quickly here, because we've only got about 3 minutes. Just who is we, host? Are you aware of the tax incentive companies? Yes, I'm aware of the tax incentives companies receive if they hire a refugee. And after the 1st of October, shows like mine will be banned on the Internet. Yes, that is one of the fun things about the ICANN that I was talking about earlier. Now, doing what's right, revisiting Lauren Southern's visit to Milwaukee, in which there were protesters claiming that the police want to kill them. "See them, they want to kill us." And there's a link to the YouTube video. I have to ask, as I've asked before, what are you doing in your communities to partner with law enforcement? Are you reporting your neighbors when they're doing drugs? Are you reporting your neighbors and doing your part as a citizen? Because law enforcement and citizenship are a partnership. These are not foreigners brought in to grind the boot down on you. These are people in your community, these police officers, who you pay to maintain order. But if you're allowing disorder in your communities to the point where police feel threatened to go into them, to the point where you are shooting at ambulances and fire trucks who are coming to help you, as they were doing in the Milwaukee riots, then you are not exercising your citizenship duties in being a partner to the police. 90 seconds. We've also got the Sheboygan County DA. There was a shooting by a veteran recently in Sheboygan, and that's near where my son lives. And the DA called for limits to the number, to the size of magazines that are allowable in the state. And I have made a blog post on why he is wrong. Now, that veteran, he had a lot of ammo. It is suspected that he had PTSD and that he wanted to commit suicide by police, which he certainly did accomplish. But to the DA, the Second Amendment is not about fun or hunting or even personal protection. The Second Amendment is to dissuade the state from becoming tyrannical. Law enforcement is not supposed to be better armed than the citizenry. They're part of the community. They're to work in partnership with the community. They should be able to call upon the citizens of the community for assistance should they need it, which means the police in Milwaukee should have been able to say, "Hey, you good citizens out there, get out here and help us get these bad guys into jail." But read the blog post. I have had my 60-second warning, and thanks, Bigfoot and Flycatch, for joining me. We are all an irate, tireless minority of one. We can all make a difference, and we're all supposed to. And please join me in praying for the family of Diane Hines, also known as Lady Di, as she passed away on August 8th. Y'all get out there, make a difference, have a good week.